This is July 30th, 2019. It's now 9:02 a.m. This is a meeting of the Legislative Committee of the State of Arizona Board of Psychologist Examiners, and I'd like to call this meeting to order. Ms. Poe, can we take a roll call?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Bohansky?
Present.
Dr. Brundage? Dr. Davey?
Present.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. Let's move ahead with agenda item 3, approval of the minutes of March 18th executive session. Is there a motion to so approve?
I so move.
I'll second it. All in favor, aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any against? All right. Second piece, we have approval of the minutes for the June 28th regular session. Is there a motion to accept?
I'll so move.
Seconded. All in favor, aye.
Oh, sorry.
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. That takes us to agenda item number 4, review, discussion, and consideration of proposed statute changes for our next legislative session. The first piece on the agenda here is the concept of adding fingerprinting at both the initial licensure application, which would put us in compliance with the rest of the healthcare boards in the state and also with the recommendations of the Sunset Committee. What is not in everyone else's licensure laws, including a update upon the renewal of licensure to assure that fingerprint clearance is still in force. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chairman, Dr. Davey, this is Jenna. So one of the questions that came up at the last committee was whether or not if someone already has a fingerprint clearance card, if the board can be added to their list of organizations that are used as, in case someone has an arrest or a charge, that we would be automatically notified. I did contact DPS, and they did acknowledge that, yes, we could be added as a direct reporter if someone already has a fingerprint clearance card and they don't obtain it under the licensing provisions.
Excellent. Other discussion? Where do we stand in terms of creating the language to be added to the bill?
We need to get a folder opened. The language would be very simple on our end and our statute. The majority of the statute change is going to come under the fingerprint DPS law, where they have to add us to all the different sections. But again, Ledge Council would do all that once we get a folder opened and move forward.
Do we need to do formal action here to open the folder?
We would need to probably make a recommendation to the board that we get approval to move forward with that. The renewal, in my previous memo, we talked about also adding an option for the board to, at its discretion, review those individuals that may not qualify for a fingerprint card. So I would suggest we put a recommendation forward to the board that we move forward with those items.
All right. Do we need that in form of a motion out of this committee?
Yes, please.
All right. If that's the case, I can so move that be forwarded to our board.
And I'll second it. Is there any further discussion? All in favor, aye?
Aye.
And I will aye it as well. Any opposed? No. A motion carries. we will move this to the board. Will this be on our August agenda?
Yes, sir.
Great. And then obviously there will be more public comment time when rules are written and all the rest of that. Okay, let's go to agenda item number B, a waiver of the EPPP for those licensed greater than 20 years in another state. Ms. Jones?
Mr. Chairman, Dr. Davey, the waiver of the EPPP for those licensed greater than 20 years, I believe we've all seen the, I hope you all had a chance to review the AG's opinion on 2569, which is the universal recognition of other licenses in other states if someone has been licensed for another year and has basically a clean record. It appears that this provision of waiving the EPPP would not be impact, I mean, it would, 2569 would take care of those applicants if they have a clean record. If you don't have a clean record, then you would need to, the board would need to decide, or the committee, if you want to put someone forward, or if you want to make a legislative change to waive the EPPP for those that have been licensed for 20 years or more.
And have a spot on the record?
Sorry. I'm sorry, I couldn't understand you.
Under the legislation from last session, that takes care of folks that do not have any record. So are we looking to change the language so that we can waive the exam for folks who do have a record?
That would be up to the committee and what you want to recommend to the board.
All right. Is there discussion?
I guess my only question is why, I mean, is that something we would do for others with the, and I don't know, I'm asking more of a question. Someone who has a blemish on their record, would we look the other way, or is that something that would just be deliberated by the screening committee or the application screening committee before it was moved forward?
I'm assuming that it would go through applications review, and if there was a concern, it would come to the full board.
So if that's the case, then I'm comfortable with moving forward.
If we do nothing, since this only affects those folks who have had prior disciplinary action, I'm assuming that's what means by a clean record, that we would want to review those in application review. So do we need to act on this at all?
Well, only if you want to change the, only if you want to incorporate a waiver of the EPPP for those licensed greater than 20 years with a disciplinary history.
You know, in 10 years of sitting here, I've seen a couple darn good psychologists. I recall a case out of Texas who was licensed essentially at a time in history in which there was no EPPP, and had practiced for 30-some years, and we couldn't give him a license in Arizona because we needed him to go take the exam.
Do you
think somebody who's
Dr. Bob, do you remember if he had a disciplinary history?
And none.
Okay, so he would qualify under the 2569?
Okay. So this is only affecting people who have a disciplinary history.
Right.
If they had a disciplinary history and were in the National Register, would we accept them?
Mr. Chairman, the application would be brought through the normal channels. It would go through the ARC.
And then would we require them to take the exam?
Yes, sir, you would. I believe. Wait, no, I need to check the statute on that, because I know one of them doesn't require, and I apologize, I wasn't prepared for that answer. I think they have a, and I apologize, Kathy's not here. On the requirements for the National Register, I know that one of them, we don't require the test results. I can't remember. I'd have to double check on that. I'm sorry.
Okay. Dr. Brundage, did you join?
I sure did, and I apologize. I had a situation at work that I had to attend to.
Thank you for making the time for us. We're discussing agenda item 4B, which is a waiving the EPPP for someone who has been licensed 20 years or more and may have had a disciplinary action. We apparently are, under last year's legislation, able to waive the EPPP for someone who is licensed 20 years or more and does not have a disciplinary action.
All right.
And the question is, do we want to recommend the board that we alter our legislation to include those who over a 20-year history may have had a disciplinary action and not require the EPPP, as would be true for everyone else who did not have a disciplinary action?
All right. Well, I think, Dr. Bohansky?
Yes.
Can I respond?
Please.
Okay. I think that it actually should be reviewed on a case-by-case basis. I think that certainly the new laws with regard to any kind of difficulties within the legal system has kind of opened up an area where someone who may have created a felony someplace else would be evaluated. But I think that it would depend on what process that discipline was provided. Certainly if it was provided 25 years ago and there hadn't been a single incident. But if it's of a grave nature where someone spends a couple years in prison, which was an application that we saw within the last year for
yeah.
fraud, then that certainly would have a marked impact on whether or not I would feel comfortable having them come into our state.
I certainly agree that it should be reviewed on an individual basis. As it stands now, following that review, they could not be licensed in our state without taking the EPPP. And what action here would do is say that after reviewing them, we found it to be a 25-year-old minor issue and we don't have concern. And we would then allow them to be licensed here without taking the EPPP in a fashion similar to allowing someone under the new law who was licensed 20 years ago or more and didn't take it, that they wouldn't have to. So following the review, right now we don't have the statutory authority to allow them to be licensed without the exam. And what we're really looking for is if, after individual review, you were comfortable with them, could we waive the EPPP and allow them to be licensed?
I would be comfortable with that. I think that over the years, we've had to look at candidates who had exemplary careers in other jurisdictions, but because they had not taken the EPPP, we had either suggested that they get a... they go through certification through ABIB or whatever, but also then that it, or take the test again. And I think that we've unfortunately been able to keep good candidates out just because of that issue.
Mr. Chairman,
is there further discussion?
The 2569 is going to waive that problem for all those people that don't have a disciplinary history.
Correct.
Okay.
So that's taken care of, but the one hole in that legislation is the person who, as you noted, may have had an incident some time ago whether it was serious or not, it should be reviewed. But even after review, unless we act in this modification, we'd still require him to take the EPPP today. If we act on this after review, if we found them to be acceptable, we could allow them to be licensed without taking the EPPP. This gets complicated.
God knows. Yes, Dr. Bohansky.
How many we're going to say. I'd like a level playing field for everybody. So I'll move that we forward it to the board for their approval, that upon review that we have the authority to license somebody similarly to what the new law says, even if they've had a disciplinary action, if we view that disciplinary action to have been minor or have been resolved to our satisfaction.
I would second that.
Further discussion? All in favor, aye?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. Excellent. We will move on to agenda item 4, number C, which is licensure requirements that may affect Argosy students impacted by the closure of Argosy University.
Mr. Chairman,
Jones, do you want to bring us up to date, please?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, committee members, Dr. Berry, last month when we discussed this, Dr. Berry made some great suggestions of carving out time frames. We talked about moving the wording degree granting institution. I'd like to report that Dr. Bohansky and I did meet with Representative Bartow and staff to try to address this issue. And my understanding are that Emily Mercado and Ingrid Garvey, who are both with Health staff, are working on options for the matter. Representative Bartow seemed very supportive of trying to do something to assist the students. And so I will need to follow up with Ingrid and Emily and Representative Bartow and see if they have any good suggestions. I don't have a response or any feedback to this point, but it looks like we would get support on that, and we could defer to their expertise in the best way to do it.
I would make a few comments for folks to be aware. This legislative game is certainly outside of my expertise, but those who play the game professionally understand the rules a hell of a lot better than any of us ever will. Apparently, there's a type of amendment we could make to our law called a session change. And what that would do is alter the language for a two-year period. And that would cover students from the year now that are just graduating their internship, and next September, those who have been matched and starting their internships in September, and essentially those are the two groups that are affected by it. The students outside of that time frame essentially are needing to take coursework and units at their receiving university, and it may not affect them. That's a potential. They're obviously looking at other potentials. The very good news is the legislative folks who would be the committee of reference on this are supportive of language changes. I am going to again hold the caution, and I'm going to point to a case heard in open board this last meeting of an applicant from a university who we have serious questions about, and it's this law that's really demonstrating its usefulness in terms of me saying I'm not sure that I want to change it because I'm seeing how it's helping us be consistent. But I do think we want to wait another few weeks to a month or so and let the legislative staff get back to us or have Ms. Jones get back with them so that we can look at reasonable options to take to our board. I'm right now, if I'm understanding the impact or consequences of what they're calling session law, kind of favorably inclined to move to that. The second option is modifying our law to include an appeals clause similar to the Georgia board, which has a very similar residency statute, as this residency statute's in the model legislation. Many boards have it. But they added an appeal clause, and as you may be aware, they have a large argosy sitting in Atlanta with a very similar issue we have. Their appeal clause says they first reject the applicant, give them the instructions on how to appeal, and then they have a special circumstances piece in there which allows them to say, yes, we recognize you met the residency requirement here at Argosy, and we're going to go ahead and accept that, even though our law says it has to be from the degree-granting institution because of the unique nature of this. I kind of like that option as well, although I have to admit freely I don't understand all the potential unintended consequences of putting that in, although I did meet with a 25-year member of the Georgia board who has been chairman there for multiple years. They seem to think that appeals clause works just ducky. So I'd also like to have that as an option that we may present to the board for discussion. Any other questions or input?
Dr. Bohansky and members of the committee, I think that, to me, makes sense. I think we need to have something which will address the Argosy issue. I'm hoping that may be a one-time issue, especially for us with the numbers of people who've been impacted in the state. But I also would like a little bit of control over those folks who perhaps are very different in training than what we would expect. So I
agree,
I would be
Dr.
in favor of that. Yeah, I would be in favor of that.
I think the important thing that we've accomplished this month is alerting the legislature as to the issue that confronts many of our Arizona residents who were caught up in this Argosy debacle, and that the agreement, sensitivity, and understanding is demonstrated there, and I think they're willing to work with us on whatever would be the best solution to make sure that these students are not inadvertently punished any further or negatively impacted any further. And I'm feeling somewhat comfortable that we will be able to arrive at, with the legislative staff input, some changes that will address those needs. I'd like to wait till we get those options before we move it to the board.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, at last month's meeting, you did move to forward the recommendation to the board to address the statutes involved, but you did not have specific language at the time.
Right, and we are going to move it to them. We just don't have the specific language yet. I would like to hold it before it goes to the board until we get recommendations on language from legislative staff. And I would also like to have the Georgia language looked at as well.
Is that a motion? We can table? Do we need a motion to table?
No, I can just table it.
All right, table it, please.
All right, we'll table it until we get the language.
Thank you.
All right, number 4D, the claims process. Ms. Jones.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, we discussed the claim process last month, and we wanted some, the committee requested they wanted some feedback from the association on this issue. Dr. Barry is in attendance today. Dr. Barry, have you had a chance to speak with your membership at all about the claim process?
I did poll the members of the legislative committee for the state association, and really there was no there were no concerns. People are pretty excited actually that the board is addressing this issue. It continues to be seen as an important issue that is we hope will reduce at least some barriers to psychologists performing expert witness services, particularly in child custody cases where this has been most affected. So there was no additional input. People were fine with how the board is dealing with this, and that the board is dealing with this. So thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Barry. I will again say on record, I find the claims process as mandated upon us to continue to be inappropriate and of questionable due process consideration, and I guess I'm my recommendation at this point is that we have set up a meeting with Superior Court judge in charge of child custody and review with that side whether or not a return to the former process is reasonable, or what they view as the effectiveness of this current claim process. My outside view or semi-inside view of the claims process, since it is so secretive, is that I think the unintended consequence here is that fathers are not filing, but it's mostly mothers filing. I don't see that it's changed or addressed the issues that it was intended to address. But I would like to talk with the Superior Court justice in charge and look at a consideration of reestablishing in our legislative package this year the language that revert to the language that we had, in which the judge most familiar with the case and the psychologists involved could review a concern presented by either side and make a determination whether or not it should come to the board in the normal process or not.
Dr. Mohansky? Yes. Several comments. I have also gone record of being adamantly opposed to the claim process. And if I remember correctly, we really struggled with this through our Attorney General's advice and pretty much had this forced upon us. It's interesting because I think that the claims process has now arrested any developing psychologist who would be willing to take on custody, and rather than assist in increasing the competency of these evals, it has actually made them much more expensive, much more difficult to get in to see anyone. And I think that those folks who have done them in the past are very reticent to continue. And so I think that actually this has been one of the more difficult parts to our public, that we are now looking at the unintended consequences of no one in the world is doing this, and the ones who are making it very, very expensive. So I think that the sooner we address that, the more positive impact we can have on those folks who need to be evaluated, want a competent evaluation, and have it reasonable in cost.
I agree with you, Dr. Brundage. I've seen some of, again, this is an unintended consequence, but if we were to change it, it would certainly tick off several psychologists who I've seen fees triple for these evaluations. And I want to impact on their profits, but I think the more important issue is families cannot get psychologists because no one's doing them anymore, or very few. And the young psychologists who are interested in forensics appear to be frightened by this. And certainly in my discussion with students and classes that I've held, the last thing they want to go into, because they're fearful of the process. So I think it's worthy of us trying to find a system that works. I've also gone amongst many of our colleagues and other boards, and they're absolutely shocked at the system, with one exception, and that's an attorney out of another Southwest state who seemed to think it was the greatest thing since sliced bread. But by and large, most boards find what we're doing to be one of the oddest things they've ever heard of, and certainly a very unusual piece of process that we got forced into. I think it's we've run its course. We've done what we were required to do by the courts and legislature, and I think it's time that we look at the consequences and propose that we make a change.
Dr. Bohansky.
Dr. Berry.
Just to your plan to meet with a presiding judge, I was told by one of our members that several of the key players within the judiciary have changed, and it's very possible that those who supported the change in the past are no longer there, and the current structure in the judiciary might be much more favorable to returning to something like what we had in the past. It was also suggested that one way that might discourage claim filing as a legal strategy during a contentious custody hearing, for example, would be to at least add something in the process so that the review committee at the board would be able to request input from the judge in the case as to the validity of the claim. So the thought was judges won't like having to deal with that, and they will end up chastising the attorneys responsible for filing the claim if they were capricious or strategic rather than valid. So those are two bits of information for you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Berry. I believe that's for open discussion with the new folks, the new judges that are involved or in charge. But I really think this is a significant thing that impacts an awful lot of families. The divorce rate in this state concerns me greatly. The children involved concern me greatly. And psychology is there to help. And I don't want to see folks discouraged from or excluded from that process. So that would be what I'd like to do, if I could ask staff to help arrange a meeting with the courts. And following that, we'll make a presentation to a recommendation for the board to consider. Reasonable?
Very reasonable.
Good. And I've got a consensus. All right. I'm going to move along then. Other items that the committee would like to consider for the upcoming legislative session?
Oh, my. Perhaps, Dr. Bohansky, I can ask Ms. Jones if she's, or Dr. Berry, if they have heard any additional information regarding possible bills to be dropped.
Mr. Chairman.
Well, we know of one. We know of one, so let me move to agenda item number 5, and that's review, discussion, consideration, a recent request from the U of A lobbyists to meet and discuss proposed legislation from PC SAS. Ms. Jones.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, I was contacted by Ms. Jenkins, who is the lobbyist for U of A, and asked us to attend a meeting to discuss the language or to discuss proposed legislation that the U of A and, according to the email, the Board of Regents would like to forward regarding adding parity between PCSAS and APA in our licensing statutes. I asked her to forward the language to me, and she said that they were going to opt to use the language that they used 2 years ago in House Bill 2237. I did forward that to everyone. I hope everybody had a chance to take a look at it. This is where they insert the PCSAS language in the paragraph C of 3220.71, and they just add the language or the psychological clinical science accreditation system.
And we do have a meeting scheduled with them.
Yes, that is scheduled for August 8th at 11 a.m.
And that's just an informal meeting. It's not a legislative committee?
Pardon?
That's just an informal meeting with them. It's not a formal committee meeting?
Correct. If other committee members want to attend it, then I would need to notice it as a in accordance with the open meeting laws.
But could representatives from the association attend?
The association is attending. Dr. Berry? Dr. Berry?
Yes, sorry. I struggled with my mute button. That's simple as that is. I am planning on attending. Yes, thank you.
I'm guessing we should listen to them before we try to make a decision within the committee, but I think it's reasonable for the committee to express or discuss any concerns or issues they have at this point, so I'd open it up for discussion.
Dr. Bohansky.
Dr. Brundage, please.
I would rather try to listen carefully to the dialogue of what they're presenting and try to figure out if it's something that we can support. Certainly, I think that it has been an issue that's created real problems with some of lack of transparency and things. And I'm just excited that we're coming to the table and discussing this in the middle of August, or in the first part of August, rather than in, you know, the third week in February or March when things get quite heated. So I guess I'm curious as to see how they would like to proceed.
I agree with you, Dr. Brundage. I think it's much better to be talking before they drop legislation than after the fact. And I think it's reasonable to have discussion with them. I think they're somewhat amazed that they have not been widely accepted across the country and have met with the resistance they have. My concern continues to be the inability to present to us a standards manual for accreditation of training programs. I've asked repeatedly for such, and we don't have it. I will ask again at this meeting, and I'm concerned that, that they again will not be able to produce anything similar to COA's standards that educational programs are required to meet. But that's my hang up with it, other than some of the procedural things they've gone through in different parts of the country. That being said, in all honesty, I don't think there is a procedure manual or standards manual out there for them. And I'm not sure they're coming to the table with anything different this year than they did a couple years ago. And frankly, I'm tired of the number of hours I keep putting into this one. And I just like it all out on the table, and what are we going to do? Other thoughts?
I'm trying to remain very open and hope that we have some of the questions that we've asked in public session answered. I think everyone was pretty specific to the answers that we would need before we proceeded. And so if they arrive and they don't have that information, then I think that they need to be redirected to say, okay, we need to do this. You know, I think it's a basic request. And so, again, I'm just hoping that that information could be provided. And perhaps we can send them some kind of communications, perhaps from Ms. Jones, asking that that would be a major factor in setting off our conversations and discussions.
Good.
Dr. Bohansky?
Dr. Berry.
In conversations with my membership, I personally and have support from the legislative committee of the state association that every applicant for licensure should meet the clearly defined academic requirements as stated in the statutes currently, regardless of accreditation of their program. And one way to deal with this would be to eliminate the free pass for any accreditation so that, you know, currently it's PCSAS. Next year or 10 years from now, it could well be another alternative accreditation group. And, I mean, the bottom line is everybody should be meeting the same academic standards regardless of who accredited their program.
I think that's a very wise statement, Dr. Berry. I also know we offered that to them 2 years ago, at which point they changed their proposed legislation to remove those standards. And that they want to get around those standards is what I'm saying, Dr. Berry. Is they will see themselves as gaining equivalence as a way of usurping those standards. They want those standards removed, taking out any privilege or free pass, as you note, taking the APA DOA out of it, and thus not having a need for theirs in there, remains with legislation that they would then go to strike the educational requirement clauses.
Well, I wish you well, and I will be at the meeting.
I'm, you know, I'm not going to tip my hand. Clearly, I've been meeting with legislators and folks behind the scenes as a independent person because I have concerns. I am going to suggest we might want to consider horse trading with them.
Dr. Bohansky?
Yes.
What horse are we trading?
I would be willing to discuss their support of a scope of change, a scope of practice change, as an alternative. See how serious they are.
Okay. Have you discussed that at all with any folks on the trip? On that meeting?
Not yet. I've certainly discussed with legislators. We have a deadline in November of Sunrise legislation changes if we're going to do it. I think now's the time for us to start thinking about such things. Any further discussion? And I look forward to our informal meeting with them. Agenda item number 6, review, discussion, consideration of recent meetings with legislators. Ms. Jones?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, as I mentioned earlier, Dr. Bohansky and I did meet with Representative Bartow and staff to discuss some of the items we've considered changing for the legislative session, the upcoming session. Fingerprinting was well received, as was the Argosy matter. We did not specifically address the claim process or the way ECPP. So, Dr. Bohansky, if you'd like to add anything else, that's just a short overview.
Again, we have a friendly ear in the legislature right now, and I think issues that are of concern to us are being seriously considered and listened to, and I'm feeling positive that there's a healthy relationship there with our legislature, and I'm hoping that we can remain transparent and open and working in a positive fashion this session. Short of that, when there's not a lot actually proposed and on the table yet, I'm not going to tell you I'm looking forward to this session because of the energy that I perceive being involved in it, but I think we're on the right track. Any other concerns or input?
Not at this time. I guess I'm just curious as to how this will unfold.
Oh, so am I.
I'm trying to remain positive.
remain positive, Dr. Brundage.
Good.
I just, you know, as I mentioned to this committee before, I just find this very interesting because I see this happening to behavior animals in the very near future, where there is a different group coming forward discussing standards, perceived standards that are very much different than what our science and field is based around. And so I find this this exercise important for us because I don't believe this is the last time we're going to see these things. And I appreciate all the energy, Dr. Lampage, that you guys are putting towards this because I think it's all extremely important issues. So thank you both.
Thank you, sir. Any other input at this point? No, I think we've gotten ourselves to agenda item 7 and consideration for future agenda items. We've listed several that we have here, potential language changes in the claims, potential PC SAS, potential scope of practice changes. I think all need to be on the agenda, and I think we need to be planning on working fairly diligently over the next few months so that we have our legislative language prepared to go into this session with and make sure that we've had appropriate input from all stakeholders and we can move forward in a consistent fashion. Is there anything I left off? Hearing nothing. That takes us to agenda item 8. I'd entertain a motion to adjourn.
I make that motion.
And we have
I would like to apologize to the committee and to the chairman of my delay. I had a emergency arise here.
Now, all things considered, thank you for taking the time. Thank everyone for your input. And onward we go. Meeting adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you.